Page 104 of The Unfolding is the story of Amy Dean.
I had to reform and redefine my identity. It wasn't in the home and the car and the labels on the clothes. I was so vogue on the outside and so extremely vague on the inside.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in the unfolding.
Hey, this is Meredith Foster. It's a constant temptation. We're bombarded with things, not just vying for our attention, but competing to be the source of our identity, our appearance, success, work, our love relationships. It's tempting to tie our sense of self-worth to these things. Amy Dean believed she had arrived. She had the house, the car, the spouse, the kids, all the things that from the outside look like success. But she craved attention, particularly from men. With access to the internet came opportunities to find that attention. And what seemed alluring at first turned into darkness and addiction. Just a caution for parents, this story does include some PG-13 content. You'll probably want to listen at a time when your kids aren't with you.
Right around 2000, computers kind of coming right onto the scene right about then. The internet was still really exciting. And what is this big wide web that we were all trying to learn and navigate? And I remember getting my first computer, being in awe of this box thing. Just, I think, the open, like, the whole world. Like, you now are connected to places that you could not ever have been connected to before. Yep. And real-time chatting and the email thing was still kind of a, right? And that's where the slow fade began for me, is chat rooms and exploring all of that. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And at first, it was innocent in nature and then started to go into places that I should not have been as a married young mom of three, and really allowed the deception and the lie and being lost in who I thought I was supposed to be or who I thought I was.
Who did you think you were?
Well, I thought I was this mom who had arrived. You know, I was living in a beautiful home with a beautiful car and beautiful children with the beautiful husband and a beautiful life, thinking that was the definition of who I am and the culmination of all of it. And was a it was a facade, right? It was a faulty foundation to build a life. And so I slowly went into places and saw things on the internet that started addiction to porn, inappropriate chat rooms, doing things that I, and having conversations that I should have never had. And really, honestly, so deceived that I wasn't really doing anything wrong because it wasn't hurting anyone.
So you felt okay about it? It wasn't like you felt convicted about it?
No, no, I didn't know Jesus then, so there was no conviction. I think down deep there's always a place where you feel like, oh, maybe this is a little beneath or unbecoming of just who you are as a person, perhaps, but no. No conviction. I thought, oh, I'm not hurting anyone. Nobody's going to know. And that's exactly where Satan wants you, right? Mm-hmm. Isolated and deceived and believing the false truth that we feed ourselves when we're in those dark places. That slowly led to then encounters. And divorce happened in 2006. So now I'm a single mom.
Was that because it came to light that you were having encounters?
I had an extramarital affair that was discovered that I admitted to. Let me just say this too. Like, anything that I'm saying is no justification for any of what I did. There's no justification. There is no rationalization. There's no excuse. I fully own my decisions and what I did. I own my sin. But it, so the divorce happened 2006, and that is when probably the darkest moments I was allowing myself to have relationships that's not relationships that were inappropriate, intense sexual promiscuity, still addicted to porn. That led into me prostituting myself for money.
Originally, was it something exciting to do that sort of drew you in and you didn't feel conviction? Was there some point along the way where the way you felt about it or you felt about yourself began to change?
When I remember back, no, it wasn't exciting. It was alluring and it was validating. I felt wanted and that was the drug, the okay. constant attention, regardless of what kind of attention it was. Attention that I didn't have and feeling as if that was what I was aspiring to, is to be held in that esteem of mm-hmm. sexiness being alluring. And so, no, it wasn't exciting. Mm-hmm. It was
addictive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Early on, you probably didn't recognize that it was addictive, I'm assuming.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I did not.
Yeah.
Didn't realize it was dark either. And it is, there is a false light, right? When you're in those places that you still can see, it's just, you're not seeing reality. And in 2011, I opened a business in Peoria. Gosh, I remember this night like it was just last night, that I was in the conference center and I was sleeping there at night, like literally had a bedroom in the conference center because I was just 24/7 wow. running myself ragged, trying to get this business up and running. And I remember one night lying in that bed. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. And I was so overcome with just remorse. And I felt gross and dirty. And I was just hopeless. And I remember crying from a place within me that I don't know. I didn't know that place existed. And I knew I needed help. I knew I couldn't continue to destroy myself and damage myself. I was still thinking that my only way out was a guy, and it was
killing him.
Truthfully. So yeah, I remember that night. I'll never forget that night. I cried out to God.
Did you? I was going to ask.
If you're there, if you care. And then a few weeks later, Scott came. Yeah, that was the bottom that night. It was dark. I had a friend that I was doing some professional networking with, coaching him on leadership development. He was coaching me spiritually. And we kind of swapped back and forth. And I was getting ready to open my business. It was the end of, beginning of April. I was opening mid-April. And he had stopped in, I believe it was a week or so before grand opening. I was running around like a crazy person, trying to get everything ready. He had stopped in, said, gave him a tour. Now, this is important. Like, when you came into my business, there was a large entryway off of an elevator. It was on the fourth floor of a building. And my office was tucked back around a corner that you couldn't get to by me giving him a tour of the center. So just... When I say that, like there's a point to this story. That day, I was frantic and just disheveled. I was anxious. I was kind of crabby too, actually. I was just like, I don't have time for this. I gave him a tour. He could sense my disease and just, I was curt, which isn't in my nature. And he said to me as he was leaving, Amy, have you asked Jesus to just help you? And I remember saying to him, Scott, I'm the last person that Jesus wants to hear from right now. And unless he can come and move 150 of those folding chairs into that room over there, I can't really use his, you know, I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm just saying. And he goes, won't you just consider it? Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, Scott, I'll consider that. He said, well, there's no time like the present. And he just took my hand and he said, just say this prayer. He led me through
Wow.
A prayer. And I guess I was expecting angels or, you know, a song,
somebody
something
to move
to
the
like,
chairs.
Write, like
the,
yeah. Jesus to come and move the chairs. Yeah. No, nothing. No, like, no sensation, no chills, no goosebumps. Just said a prayer. But I went back to my office, Meredith, and on the corner of the desk was a Bible. And it wasn't from Scott. I greeted him on the elevator. I saw he had nothing in his hands when he came in. It was a blue Bible. It's the Bible I still have today, 10 years later. It is, I can't believe I don't have it with me, actually, but in a voice, as if someone was standing right next to me, said, start at Matthew. And from that day forward, April 11th, 2011, I had just an insatiable desire for scripture. I couldn't get enough. So I did. I started at Matthew, and that just led to me starting to write about what I was learning and then putting those things that I was learning into stories and my life and applying them. And I had a little blog, and nobody read it except three people, but I fed them to live their lives, so they had to read it.
They were be your children,
girls,
I take it.
Three daughters. Yeah.
Read this.
And anyway. But yeah, that just started understanding for me in a way that I could apply the things that I was learning to my life.
Were you still addicted to pornography at this point? Were you still involved? Was prostitution still happening?
No, I wasn't. But I wasn't white as snow. I'll just be honest about that. Yeah. I was still participating in behaviors that were not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And it was shameful. And I felt at that point in my life, at this point, I knew through my conversations with Scott and being able to just have him teach me about what Jesus did, why he did it.
Did he begin to do that after the prayer?
No, it was before. It was before. So yeah, I was coaching him on leadership some things, and he was coaching me spiritually.
Wow.
So there was seeds planted along the way. Uh-huh. But yeah, no, it wasn't like, you know, I said the prayer and then miraculously I was, you know, sin free. That's just not the way that it works. Mm-hmm. But I was aware. My eyes were opened. And so I think for me, the heaviest load to carry is that of shame and regret and guilt. And I was guilty and I knew it. And I was so aware of it. And that is painful to know that I consciously made those choices with three little girls watching. What do you do with that? How do you reconcile that? Except Jesus. You can't.
And sometimes, maybe 99% of the time, that shame, it keeps us from going to God. You know, it holds us back. We don't come boldly before the throne because we feel so ashamed.
No, we don't. In fact, I felt for many years, like I wasn't worthy of it. And I had to keep, constantly punishing myself because it takes a bit, maybe for some, maybe not for some, to realize the sacrifice was complete. The sacrifice that Jesus made is all-encompassing. And it is done. It is finished. Mm-hmm. It is over, and we don't have to continually persecute ourselves because we're making less of what Jesus did for us.
Can you talk through the process of where you talked about the shame that you felt, you know, how you got released from that?
Yeah, I don't know if you're fully released. It's something that I still really struggle with, that forgetting, right? Forgive and forget. Mm-hmm. I know I'm forgiven. But the forgetting is so challenging because I know I did those things. I know I consciously, openly, willingly chose those behaviors. And so how do I forget that? I think for me, the shame and releasing that to Jesus was a gradual thing. And there are moments still where I feel that, I don't know if I've fully mm-hmm. given that over, because there are still times and I'll have a memory or I'll think of an experience that I had and I'll get stuck there. Yeah. And I think, oh, before you are new, you are born again. And I have to remind myself of the promises. Recently, my most recent blog was 8,810 reasons to be encouraged. I have read there are 8,810 promises in the Bible. If we stood on one a week, it would take us 169 years to get through them all. I don't plan on sticking around. Who knows? God has a plan. But if we did one a day, one promise a day, that would take us 24 years. So I don't know what plan you have for the next 24 years, but I would highly encourage to perhaps somewhat tuck that into the plan, a promise a day. And I think it was just camping out on the promises of who I was, because I had to reform and reshape and redefine my identity. And it wasn't in the MBA, and it wasn't in motherhood, and it wasn't in being a wife, good or bad. It wasn't in the home and the car and the labels on the clothes. I was so vogue on the outside and so extremely vague on the inside. And it was allowing God to change that and to turn that. That is when I was able to realize acceptance. Yes, I am a sinner and I am in need of a savior. And while I did those things, I am not defined by them. I am defined by Ephesians 1:6, accepted in the beloved. And it is daily, hourly sometimes that I have to remind myself that when Jesus stands in front of me, I am filtered. God sees me through him and I am clean and perfect and without blemish. And so I have to remember that when I go back there and I remember that time, there's nothing more than Satan wants to remind me of that.
Absolutely.
And so now my competitiveness isn't necessarily to stay in the Christian walk. It's to beat Satan. And he really doesn't know what he took on because it's not happening. And but you, as careful as you have to be, like, bring it on, Satan, because he will be careful. So it is, it's a beautiful story, but you would think, you know, as I gave my life to Christ, oh, it's over. It's all, you know, yay,
all
happy
new.
Ending.
It's all going to be great from here on.
No, sister. That's not the deal. And I think, you know, I say all the time, or I've read this somewhere, it's not me, but yeah, if you want an easy faith, Christianity is not the gig to sign up for, right? Like it is this, just don't. It's not easy and it is not for the faint of heart, but.
So you're saying once you picked up that Bible and you'd prayed with Scott and you began to read, it wasn't like it went smooth sailing from there on.
Oh no. So that was 2011. I was divorced in 2006, have been single mom since. We could do a whole podcast on the dating thing, but I'll try to stay away from that topic. That is a whole nother deal. But so I start this business, 2011, Scott comes. I'm just about to open. Various things happened with the opening of that business. Just the space I was in went into foreclosure.
Oh, wow.
So now I have to move to another building. Just story after story of
hurdles
and obstacles that happened with that, overcame that, was in a relationship in 2012, moved into the new building, beginning of the year, went through all of that. The end of Thanksgiving, that relationship ended abruptly, and just found out that a bank had bought the building that my second location was in, didn't want a conference center in their bank. So they offered to buy me out of the lease. So now I'm either going to look for a third space in 2 years, or I'm just going to let God move in another way. And opted for that let God move in another way. The relationship ended. I was devastated.
Okay. I was going to ask if that was by your choice or no.
No, it was not. Devastated. Went through the holidays, extremely depressed, suicidal, struggling. Decided to close the business. Did that early February. But before that, in January of 2013, was living with my sister. Her house burns down.
Oh, my goodness.
And now I have literally nothing, no business, no boyfriend, no house, homeless. And
some people at that point would say, this Christianity thing stinks.
Yeah, no, I dug
were
in.
You, were you feeling that way at all?
Yes. Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and why? Why? I'm doing this journey. I'm at a loss to make it all make sense. But yet my competitive nature dug in and just said, bring it on, Lord.
Hmm.
Bring it on. Like, I'm not faint of heart and I'm not backing off. And I know that at least one of your promises was that you have a beautiful future. And while I'm not seeing it, I also know it says you're faithful. And when I'm not, I can't stop. I can't give this up because it gets a little hard. And at that point, he sent me to Brazil with a missions team from Richwood's church. No job, no home. I still
no idea what's ahead.
No, zero. I went to Brazil and I remember being in the first village that we stopped in, traveled 8 hours on the Amazon River to get to our first stop. And that night, the first night we were there on the boat, we stopped in a village and this woman was very distraught. I didn't know what she was saying. I don't speak Portuguese. We had an interpreter with us, but she was just very upset, couldn't speak, and her emotions were so raw. And we prayed over her. And but prior to leaving, I had gone through some intense interviews with Marriott, was waiting, had my last interview for the position, two final candidates. And I'm getting on a plane the next day to go to Brazil and, you know, thinking, oh my goodness, again, the timing. You know, they're not going to wait for me to get back from Brazil. I just remember praying over this woman in our group. And I thought in my head, Lord, if there is a blessing for me when I get back waiting for, with this job offer, could you just give it to her now? I'll be fine. I don't know what she needs you do, but again, I just heard a voice say, now you know my heart.
God was reforming Amy, changing who she was and the source of her hope and identity. Part two of her story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, you seem to me to be a naturally happy person, but I've heard you say that's not your natural disposition. How do you explain that?
I'm a regular human being. I mean, many people appear a certain way to you. It took a lot of work and training. So, you know, you've heard me talk about out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. That means I'm spewing out what's really in my heart. You know, we get frustrated, we get angry about what's happening around us, we want things to be better. So if we dwell on that, it shows up in our conversation. But if we dwell on different things, what comes out of our mouth is better. That's why I appear to be happy, because I work on what's inside my heart. 1 Timothy 4, Paul is encouraging Timothy, do something good. And he says, have nothing to do with godless myths, but train yourself to be godly. You know, we go to the gym to train ourselves. We go to tennis and train and get our tennis game better or our football game better, et cetera. We can train ourselves to have better thoughts and have better actions. That's why I say, I'm not naturally like that, but I work at it. And I think a lot of people work at it too, not just me. I encourage people to work at their behavior, not just their sports and at their weight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At HabibHabib.com, I have motivational minutes and inspirational minutes and talk a lot about these things. And it's just dwelling on the good in the world. There's still a lot of good in the world and it can make us happier.
And now part two of Amy Dean's story.
Lord, if there is a blessing for me when I get back waiting for, with this job offer, could you just give it to her now? I'll be fine. I don't know what she needs you do, but again, I just heard a voice say, now you know my heart. And that forever changed me. I referred to Amy before Brazil and the Amy after Brazil. And I think so many times we go to him wanting and we experience the joy in his love in such a profound and deep way when we ask him to bless others instead and to give our blessings. There's going to be so many. And I'm telling you the bad stuff, right? But along the way, there have been some really profound blessings in my life.
But to be in a place where, you know, when you've been in a place of addiction where you're very focused on meeting your need, right? Constantly going back to that. And then coming to a place where you're so willing to trust God that you're willing to give up what seemed like the hope of security in your future,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the way out.
The way out of this, you know.
Devastating financial situation.
Yeah. That's a radical change of heart. I can see why you refer to yourself as Amy before Brazil and Amy after Brazil.
Yeah, I think be careful when you pray, Lord, break my heart for what breaks yours, because he will. But it's at that moment, do we surrender and say, yes, Lord, you know, that's what surrendering is. It's a life of saying, yes, Lord, no matter what it is, when it's good, yes, Lord, when it's bad, yes, Lord, red light, yes, Lord, I'm late at this red light, yes, Lord, it is. And in that moment, as early on as I was in my walk, I just knew that giving or asking him to give perhaps my blessing was just the heart of Jesus. And so I should have probably said this in the beginning. Anything I say here isn't me. I can't say that I am walking around knowing all the answers or, you know, it's just aware. It's just an awareness of his love and his goodness and his grace and his kindness. And how do we give that to others? How do we model that?
I was just going to say, it's interesting that when you're talking about, you know, being aware of his goodness and his kindness, where you have just walked through a season where it doesn't feel very kind and it doesn't feel very good.
No.
But you were able to have, you know, you were gifted with faith to believe that you could trust in his goodness, even when it didn't seem good and when it wasn't good at the moment.
Yeah, it wasn't good in the moment, but I did. Here's what I thought, and maybe this all comes back full circle, because I feel in the last year with what the world has gone through, we were forced to perhaps spend time doing things that we wouldn't normally have done. And 10 years in, how fitting that last year, I pick a word of the year every year. And in 2020, my word was behold. I wanted to see through, if you read the scripture on what behold means, it's seeing something through the eyes of your heart. I wanted to see the world that way. What could I behold in the year that would just create beautiful moments, beautiful memories with Jesus and with God in my spiritual walk? Interesting that my word is behold in the year of a pandemic, when you are forced to be at home, and I'm thinking, what's to behold here? You know, like my children always, they're grown and raised and gone now. Well, you know, but what's here to behold? And it brought me back to those first days when I was brand new walking with Jesus, that for me, what was enough was his presence. And it wasn't that I was going to prayer time with an agenda or a list of expectations. He doesn't owe us anything. And it was a year of just, he was enough. And to go back and to be in that, I read, and I believe it was Francis Chan that said, what if all heaven is just eternity in his presence? There's no golden paths. There's no mansions. There's no buffets. You don't get the crown of life. It's not all about that. It's just his presence. Are you still in? And I heard that very early on as a Christian. And I'm going to be honest, I thought, well, I kind of want the mansion. Hold on. Let me think about this, right? But now, having seen the heart of God in my life, having experienced it in ways that are so beautiful, and knowing that I feel the most joyful when I'm just sitting quiet and grateful And so, yes, COVID and all of that brought me back to his presence. And if I have to kind of wrap it up the last 10 years, there's a new song by Natalie Grant, My Weapon. And it's his presence. Your presence is my weapon. But it's so much more than that. It's a joy, too. It's my greatest joy, being aware of that. You know, I think we have to have this in-depth biblical life, and we should. But sometimes it's just enough to be in his presence. And so now the answer is yes. Yes, is all heaven is just eternity in his presence. It is so much more than we can fathom. It is so much more than we can ever hope or dream or imagine. And so yes, resounding yes, that's all I get to do for the rest of eternity. Yes, Lord, I'm in on that. And so it's kind of been a nice 10-year anniversary and a celebration of becoming cognizant that there is a presence to now that's all I want is his presence. Mm. Yeah, it's been a beautiful, beautiful 10 years.
So I have to ask though, when you came home, did the job at Marriott materialize?
Yes, it was mine. Yes.
It was?
It was. I got that job and that has led now to the that was 2013 that happened. And the last 8 years in my career have been, there are no words to describe how fast God can move. I am, I said to you in the hall, like I only said yes to this deal, you and me sitting here chatting, because I get to brag about my dad, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went from homeless, having nothing, lost everything in a house fire, no job. and I have an MBA, right? So I have an MBA, big deal. I'm educated and I have been successful, started and run multiple companies. But what he has done in 8 years to take me from that place of just nothing to I now work for a Fortune 120. I'm a national account manager, managing multi-million dollar corporations for a large company. And I've been promoted 5 times in 5 years.
Wow.
That is unheard of in corporate America. God, it is not me. I told you before, I'm not that smart, but God is that good. Hmm. And he is that faithful. And I think that he was tickled by me not quitting. And I think he thought, okay, we got a warrior here and let's see what we can do. But just beautiful stories and so many ways that I could tell you how I was able to share him in corporate America. And that's really where my ministry field is now. And as I go about just every day, how can I model him in these places where it's not usually a topic we get to talk about openly?
I would guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. But it sometimes, what's that saying? Spread the gospel and when necessary, use words. That's so profound in a place where you have to really be cognizant and careful of how we share our faith. But again, when we do, how many people are saying, me too, I believe too. So, yeah, again, just it's not me.
Let's just imagine that there's somebody who's listening and there are things that they've done that are like chains around them and they've just not been able to walk free from that.
If you know Jesus, he's already done it. Put it down. Just put it down. If you don't know Jesus, won't you just consider it?
Kind of like Scott said to you that
There's
day.
There's no time like the present. Yeah, he has for you chains broken and darkness held back. He has a life and a plan and a glorious path. But the longer you hold on to what you did, the unfolding, the glorious unfolding is prevented. And so I guess today, right now, in this moment, start at Matthew and just read and let it go. It's overwhelming to know you're the one that he leaves the 99 for, that you did that and you made him do that. But he did. And now it's done. And so again, it's a choice. It's a choice. Am I going to sit in this and wallow and mm-hmm. be, yeah, there's a process of healing. And I highly recommend that, you know, go through that process, whatever that looks like.
What helped you in the healing process?
I counseling, I did have some really incredible, good counseling. There is no better counselor than the Bible and His Word. I cannot say that enough. I love groups and helps and support. But ultimately, it is the Bible and the book and time. And it's time. And I guess so for me, I just decided I wasn't going to live there. I just wasn't going to allow that. Did I do it? Yes. Did I, do I have those memories? Yes. Yes. But I'm not going to live there. I'm out. I'm moving toward the promises, mm-hmm. all 8,810 of them.
I'm trying to even just imagine, I mean, you're such a radically different person mm. now sitting here where you are than where did we start? 2006?
Oh, gosh,
when you
yes.
think about the difference, what do you see as the biggest difference?
I went from a person, I think I said before, who was just so vogue on the outside, chasing all the things of the world, really, honestly, truly believing it was all about me. It really was. To now, knowing that the most beautiful part of me no one can see but Him. And I'm okay with that. I'm really, really okay with it. Being so self-absorbed, now just being so others-focused. Not that I still don't love great shoes, but, you know, I'm just saying. But I just really don't need those things. Yeah. I think that's the biggest transformation, is just really being okay with knowing that the center of who I am is based in the center of His heart. And from there, you can do anything.
There are so many things that tempt us to find our identity in something other than God. Amy mentioned she writes a blog, and that's one of those places that will remind you that your source of hope and security is in Jesus. It's just encouragement for everyday life. If you want to check it out and learn about Amy's speaking engagements, head over to her website, amydean.com. That's amydean.com. Thanks so much to Amy for sharing her story. Thanks to Jamie, who sent us a note on our Facebook page. She said, "This podcast is changing my life. I go through spells of chasing God and then going back to the world. It's helping me grow close to God and want to chase Him more and more and put down my own addictions more and more." That's really cool. Thank you, Jamie. Head to the Unfolding Podcast Facebook page to send us a note or to tell us about an angel encounter story. We're working on a special episode of Angel Stories for this Christmas. Thanks to Jason Rackow, our most excellent producer. Thanks to Tara Buchanan for telling me about Amy's story. And finally, thanks to Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Head to HabibHabib.com to learn more about Live to Lead. It's a leadership and personal growth event featuring John Maxwell. That's coming up soon. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.